Hey, what's up, Nova fans? You're listening to the Throw Your V's Up Wildcast. I'm Ryan Anderson, and joining me as usual is fellow Villanova alum Mike Matchers. Mike, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. How about you?
I'm hanging in there, my friend. New year. I can't say new me, but so far so good.
Well, yeah. So far so good. You owe me $20.
Yeah. Yeah, that one hurt a little bit. We bet on the NFL playoffs. The two games last Sunday, so like a week and a half ago, with the Bears Eagles and the Chargers Ravens. I lost on both those. That was pretty bad poopy.
Yeah.
The funny thing is too, I was talking to my friend, and so I took the Bear and I took the Ravens, and I can't say I like Phil Rivers, but we were looking back at his resume, so to speak, and I can't remember what his playoff record is, but he hasn't lost to a non Hall of Famer in the playoffs, basically. So it's kind of a dumb bet by me.
Yeah, that's all right.
But thanks for the reminder. I do have to pay you on that.
Yeah.
Since the last time we talked on here about Nova, though, we're sitting atop, all alone, sole possession in first place of the Big East. Who would have thought that, huh?
Yeah, it's the Big East.
The Big East, right? So we have gone 3-0 since the last time we did a podcast. So after fighting off a feisty DePaul team at home, Nova went on the road and beat kind of a weird Providence team that has started very poorly in the Big East, but was supposed to be a little bit better.
And they did just knock off the Hall earlier tonight. So,
right. So was that at home or on the road?
It was at Providence.
At Providence, okay. Still, that's a good win. So Nova beat Providence 65-59 at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. After getting out to a huge lead, we let them back in and barely hung on there at the end with that. The guy Ashton Lankford just holding onto the ball and not realizing how much time was left. That was pretty bizarre, right?
Yeah, I mean, he clearly, I guess, thought they were down three, and he was going to try to hit a shot to tie it. I don't know, and I think that was actually, if not immediately before, but you know, somewhat before coming out of a timeout. So clearly, his head was somewhere else.
Yeah, I think it was off of a free throw or something, but I couldn't believe he didn't call timeout sooner, and he being Coach Cooley.
Yeah.
But we got out of there with a win. We were the better team for the most part. We let him in kind of the last 5-6 minutes, which is whatever. But so after that, we Nova came home to the Pavilion and outlasted St. John's 76-71. Nova did not cover the wood in that game. So basically traded the whole game and then found a way to finish it off at the end. And then this past Saturday, did the trek out to Omaha and withstood another early barrage to, again, outlast, I think is the best description, a pretty decent Creighton Blue Jays that have also struggled in the early going here in the Big East. 90-78. All right, so 3-0 in those games, 4-0 total in the Big East here. But what's your big takeaway from this three-game stretch?
Yeah, I think the general takeaway that I have is we're just way too reliant on Booth and Pascal. We can't have those guys continue to score, you know, 60-70% of our points night in and night out. Especially, you know, when you get into conference play and you're playing two games a week, you know, there's familiarity, you know, the fact that we've sort of been at the top of the league and everyone's going to give you their best shot night in and night out. It's just going to be too tough for those two guys to kind of carry the ship all the way in through the conference schedule. So I think in general, that's one thing. You know, you talked a bit about it in the Providence game, kind of letting them back in. So we went over 7 minutes without scoring to let a 20-point lead evaporate. And then we had some cold spells against Creighton. We got out of the gate slow against St. John's. So, you know, while we've won those games, I don't know that we've played, well, I know we haven't played a full 40 minutes yet. So those are the things that kind of stick out to me. I think the team's improving. I think we've looked better offensively when Quinterly's been running the point, better ball movement. Gillespie playing off the ball, I think, is you know, ultimately where he belongs. And then the last thing that sticks out for me is sort of the vanishing of DCR. And, you know, I'm a fan, you know, I've always sort of been in his corner, but the problem is he doesn't really have much of a jump shot at all to speak of. And what's essentially happening is, you know, the way our offense works, if he can't hit a jump shot, teams are essentially not guarding him defensively. They're double teaming the shooters. And, you know, ultimately he's not even really rebounding when he's out there. So, you know, as much as I like him and as much as I think he has upside and value, I just think right now he's not bringing a whole lot to the table.
I agree. Let's start back to your first point, though, about Booth and Pascal. It's been incredible how good they've been, especially Booth. I'm looking here at the numbers, and Pascal's numbers are also very, very good. But from watching the games, Booth just stands out to me more, his impact and ability to really control the game. And across the board, both of their numbers have jumped up. So Phil is shooting, having an effective field goal percentage in conference play of 63.6. That's up from 57.4 throughout the regular season. But the huge jump has come in his facilitating. He's jumped from a 23.8 assist rate, so the percentage of baskets he's assisting his teammates while he's on the floor, to a 31.6 assist rate, which is fourth in the Big East. That's a huge jump. 31, Villanova's rarely had guys, if you remember our discussion about point guard play, that have gone above that 30% mark. It's been incredible. And Pascal, same thing. Went from a 54.9 effective field goal percentage up to a 62.8 in conference play. His defensive rebounding, you talk about DCR, we're going to talk about minutes later, but you know, the thing that I've always yelled about is Pascal's not been a good defensive rebounder historically, and with DCR not playing, he's had to play the center a lot more, and he's been great, man. He's getting 21.2% of the defensive rebounds when he's on the floor in conference play. That's the fifth best mark in the conference, which is unreal. His turnover rate too has vanished. It was pretty good for a guy who is 6'8", handling the ball on the floor for the regular season for the most part. At 17% of his possessions ended in turnovers, but now in conference play, that's down to 11.9, which is 15th best mark for a guy with his usage. But the thing we've been talking about, their minutes are crazy. So on the season, Pascal's played 86% of the minutes played, which is still very high. Booth, total in the season, 85.3. Again, very high. I went back and looked, and the last time we had two guys above the 80 mark was, I wanted to say, the year before, a couple years before Arch was there. I'm blanking on the year. I think it was 2010 with Pena and Fisher. Anyways, in conference play, though, Booth is playing 92.5% of the available minutes, and Pascal's playing 95.6% of the available minutes. Pascal's number one in the conference, and Phil is number six. So I'm with you about the sustainability of that being a question moving forward, but they've still been amazing. Their numbers have not really suffered yet, and it's been pretty incredible when I sit back and look at the fact that we're 4-0 in the Big East, and you know, we're clearly in first place. You look at all these other teams, and we talked about, you know, all the other guys that were, you know, our picks for players of the year, and they've all been great. Howard at Marquette's been amazing. He had 53 points. Powell at St. Seton Hall's been a dude. He played Marquette tough the other day, which was a great game. Diallo has been okay, but he's still been good. But Booth and Pascal, we got two of those guys, man. We're still number one.
I'm not going to pull any punches here. I mean, I think the league is down, and I think because we have two guys that are, you know, legitimate all-conference players, there's a lot of things that we're going to be able to hide some of the deficiencies with this team over the course of the year. I just wonder how long it lasts until they completely break down, or, you know, if you've got one game where they get, you know, into foul trouble or just have an off night. I mean, do the wheels completely come off this thing and, you know, we could go lose to Georgetown or DePaul or, you know, a team like that that we should otherwise beat.
Right. And so I came out of retirement this week and I put up a short little blog post. So you can check out more of it on the same place you get the podcast, which is throwyourvsupwildcast.wordpress.com. Anyways, it's a column I'm going to try and do on a weekly basis. It's my favorite column during the basketball season used to be this column called Tuesday Truths with John Gassaway, who is the guy. He's the man. He's the gee. And it's a great thing. He does a little per possession breakdown of everything in the conference. Anyways, one of the things I pointed out in there was that we've had really slow starts. And in three of the games, Creighton, St. John's, and DePaul, after the 10-minute mark, we were down 9 against Creighton, 6 against St. John's, and 14 against DePaul. Providence was the one outlier where we jumped all over them at the beginning.
Well, but even in that case, right? But we came out in the second half and were very flat. So, you know, we started the game looking strong, and we hit a bunch of threes, which kind of gives you that early cushion. But coming out of the locker room, we were flat.
Right. But I think that it's got to the reason we're starting off so slow, that's got to be because Phil and Pascal know that they're going to have to play all these minutes, right? And so therefore they can't exert themselves at full throttle at the beginning of games. To me that's pretty clear. I think what's happening is that something you're seeing too?
Yeah, I mean, I think they might be holding something back a little. Booth, I don't have the splits in front of me, but if you look at his first half points versus second half points in conference play, he's been doing a lot more damage in the second half. So I think he certainly is trying to pace himself, and he's doing a lot of that damage when the team really needs a bucket. So, yeah, there's probably a little something to that. The other thing is, and I've sort of seen it a bit, is you can start to see guys deferring a little bit and kind of waiting for Booth and Pascal to make that move at the beginning of the game. And I think when Quinterly has not been in at the point, which typically has not been happening until, you know, somewhere around the 12-minute mark, the offense is just a little bit stagnant. The ball movement's not there. We're settling for contested jump shots. And so I think a lot of those things are what's resulting in us either falling behind or just not really scoring at any type of consistent clip right out of the gate.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about Quinterly, though. Let's get into the minutes discussion. So Quinterly, right, we've talked about it a ton. He's had a couple DNPs, but since conference play has started, he went 25 minutes in the Connecticut UConn game when Gillespie was hurt, and then since then he's gone 17 minutes to Paul, 10 minutes Providence, 11 minutes St. John's, and then 17 minutes at Creighton. So he's getting his run a lot more. So what have you seen in the rotation, and what do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I still don't really understand what we're doing. We've started six different lineups this year. Only one of those was really necessitated by injury. When you look at last season, we only used five the entire year. Again, one of those being necessitated by injury. So if you look at it like that, you know, all of last year, we basically willfully used four different starting lineups. And through 17 games this year, we've used five. And then, you know, we've gone anywhere from a six-man rotation to a nine-man rotation. Guys disappear for stretches at a time. Cremo continues to play inexplicably. Samuel seems to be a guy that's kind of coming into his own, and his minutes have been a bit of a roller coaster. So I'm very frustrated and perplexed with watching these rotations. To me, you know, just sitting there and watching as a fan, I don't feel like we've got the best six, seven guys playing the majority of the minutes.
So I kind of agree that it's kind of gone up in arms. I've been of the opinion all along that the minutes and rotations have been in flux as Jay kind of has tinkered, and his lack of patience or frustration has caused him to do weird things with the lineups. I think recently he's trying to figure out now that Quinterly seems like he's got to play him for whatever reason. I don't know what. Isn't that kind of weird? You know, here we were thinking the guy was maybe going to transfer. So he plays. What do you remember the game? What was it? What was the game afterwards that he did the?
It was Penn. He got a do not play, and then obviously we lost that game.
So he got zero Penn, did not play against Kansas, and then he comes out and plays 25 against UConn, and all of a sudden, you know, he's got to be in the rotation, which we all agree he looked great, but it just weird. I think that's really thrown things into flux.
Well, here's a couple of things I want to point out, and I don't want to make it a discussion on a one-for-one, you know, position-wise, but I think where the minutes for me, let's start, you know, we sort of started on this path, so let's stick with Quinterly, right? And I'd like to talk about Samuels a bit too and probably Roundtree, but if we stick with Quinterly, and in my opinion, his minutes should be coming from Cremo. So let's just look at this since we've gone into conference play. You've got 5 points for Cremo against DePaul, and then 3 straight goose eggs, Providence, St. John's, and Creighton. In those 3 games, he played 14, 16, and 17 minutes. No points in any of those games. So if you take a look at his season average, right, he's on average scoring 0.27 points per minute played. Now, I realize that there's noise in there, and it's one thing to, you know, compare Morgan State versus Michigan versus DePaul, right? So there's a lot of moving pieces, but this is what I'm going to just point out. So now we go Quinterly. Since we've started conference play, he's gone 5, 2, 6, and 7. And in those games, he's played 17 minutes, 10, 11, and 17. For his season, per minute played, he's averaging 0.33 points per minute. So he's actually better than Cremo on a total season points per minute played, right? So let's just start there. To me, you can't have a guy starting or playing 17 minutes a game in conference and score 0 points in 3 straight games. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't, right? So, I mean, even when you boil
his numbers, his numbers are, I'm looking at him right now, Cremo's numbers in conference. He's 1 of 8 from three. He's 1 of 3 from two. He's shooting. He's only taking 12% of the shots when he's on the floor, which is down from 16% when on the season. His numbers are just abysmal. He's just cratered.
And I understand that the shot volume is different, and what his game is different. But take effective field goal percentage in conference. Cremo 22%. Quinterly 52%. Right. So. Again, I understand, you know, we're not asking Quinterly to go out and shoot, you know, 20 shots a game. He's more of a facilitator than a scorer. But that said, his offensive production has clearly been better than what Cremo has offered.
I agree. The interesting thing that I've seen is, so when Gillespie came back that first game against DePaul, Jay was very willing to play those three guys together, Quinterly, Gillespie, and Booth. Sorry, not those three guys, because Cremo's not part of that. That's what I want to see a lot more of. But recently, he's been more flipping Quinterly and Gillespie. So they're not sharing the floor as often together. And I think that's really taking into Cremo's minutes, and he's dropping. And I think it could just be impact of his role has changed. I mean, he's a guy who on his past years was playing in Albany. His 2 years prior to coming here at Nova, he played 89.5% of the minutes in 17, 89% of the available minutes in 2018. And now his numbers are at like 49% for overall in the season and only 40% in conference. And I think, and you can see it otherwise how his role is kind of changing, right? We talked about his shots dropping, his assist rate's higher, actually in conference play than it is regularly. His steal is high, his steal percentage is higher. So I think he's showing some decent effort defensively when he's out there, but he's committing more fouls. I think overall he's showing some frustration of kind of his role changing. That doesn't mean he can't, you know, that it's still on him to be better. And and I'm with you on Quinterly.
I just don't think he's that good. I mean, he's at a different level of competition. Yeah. You know, his shot is not very fluid. He's a defensive liability. And a lot of times, you know, if it's not his guy scoring, it's him out of position that leads to, you know, a backdoor cut because somebody else is coming over to play help defense. So here's the one other thing, right? So let's bring Arch into the discussion. And if you look at win share per 40 minutes played in conference, you've got Cremo negative at about 0.5%. You look at Arch, he's positive, but at 0.06.
You mean baby Arch or real Arch?
No, baby Arch. And you've got Quinterly at a 0.10. So of the three, he's actually been the most productive player from an offensive and defensive perspective since conference play started.
Hey, you're not going to get any complaints here. I think, though, that Cremo does play a role just for his shooting. And I don't know if he can ever get to a point, you know, he should be a catch-and-shoot guy, and that should just be it, and play whatever type of defense and all that, but he's just there to catch and shoot. He's a little too gun-shy for that. He likes to kind of take guys off the dribble, and he's pretty good at doing that. But this isn't an NBA team where he can come in with the second unit and kind of be that scorer off the bench. This is a college game where Booth and Pascal are going to be playing. Even if they play less minutes, they're still going to be playing, you know, 88% of the minutes. There's very few times we're not going to want to have the ball go through those two dudes, and we're going to need Cremo's skill set. And I think that's really just the reason he's a tough kind of fit on our team this year. And I agree with you, though. I think they should go more to Quinterly, because Quinterly's kind of deserved it. But we talked enough about these guys. How about the front court? How about Rountree? So he didn't start this last game, which is his the first time he didn't start since the first game of the year, which doesn't really count because they started Painter, and that was just a whatever, I don't want you to transfer type start, even though he transferred anyways. And he only played 10 minutes. He played 5 minutes against Creighton and 5 minutes against St. John's. What do you think really change there in Jay's mind to make such a drastic cut to his minutes?
So I sort of alluded to it a bit, and I think teams adjusted to the fact that he can't shoot. And because of the spacing and the way we play, and in most situations, you know, even our bigs, they're not playing in the low post. They're kind of floating up towards the foul line or you know, out maybe towards a wing. The defenders can just abandon him because they know he has no shot of shooting a jump shot in that position with any, you know, real high success rate or any level of success, right? So I think that's the key. I think that's the key thing to change, is that I think teams are playing us and defending us a little differently. The other piece is, even if you take that into account, his real value should be from a rebounding perspective. So in the non-conference games, he averaged about 7.6 rebounds per game. In the four conference games, he's averaged 2. So you've got a guy that's essentially being shut down from an offensive standpoint and not contributing on the glass. I don't see why you would really need to give him the minutes. I really like the guy. I've tried to be in his camp. I think he's a good player. I think he's a good energy guy. But right now, I don't see him bringing really any value to the table, unfortunately.
Yeah, his you know, it's really hard to judge him on kind of his role. But his numbers have just, they're really weird. I mean, he's only taking 6% of the shots while he's on the floor in conference games. Granted, it's only 4 games, small sample size. But that's absurd. He, you know, 6%, that's like, no one's ever been that low. And I agree on the rebounding thing. And I think it just, you know, you see it in our numbers, right? You look at our numbers of it's just a trade-off that Jay has been okay with making. And he said, you know what, I'm going with shooting, and I don't care if I sacrifice offensive rebounding. So on the season, we're getting 30% of the offensive rebounds that are available. Overall, in conference, we're only getting 22.4% of those, which is ninth worst in the Big East. And block shots is another category where we're just totally you know, down now. We're blocking about 8.7% of two-point field goal attempts on the season as a whole, down to 5.9% in conference. And that is the worst mark in the league. However, the interesting thing is that our defense hasn't suffered kind of as much as you would think. Defensive rebounding is a different skill from offensive rebounding, as we've talked about. Pascal's picked up that slack as he needed to, as he's finally showing he can do. And we're not fouling. We're fouling at an extremely low rate, which is very strange to me because I watch these games and I'm constantly angry at the refs, which I think is just the homer in me. It just feels that way. And I think it's more when we have the ball, I feel like we get fouled a lot more. But I guess we're getting a whistle, man. We're only fouled. Our free throw rate in conference play is 20.5, right? Which is down from 29.6 overall in the season. So I think Jay was just cool with the trade-offs and said, screw it. I don't really care. We're going to outscore people. And we're going to sacrifice a little bit there.
Yeah, and so the other thing too, and you know, when you talk about trade-offs, for me, in this case, the Roundtree minutes kind of become the Samuels minutes, right? And so you talk about Booth and the way he's been rebounding in conference play at a pretty good clip. If I said Booth, I meant Pascal, right?
So you've
got Pascal at a 13.7. In terms of total rebound percentage, and Samuels is right behind him in the conference at 13.5.
Yeah, Samuels has been amazing in the games that he's played. He didn't even play in the DePaul game, which is kind of funny. I feel like Samuels and Swider are two guys that so far they're kind of really hit or miss. They're going to have games where everything kind of goes right for them and they seem to figure things out and it just flows for them. And then there's games where they can't really do anything right. And I guess that's just experience and opportunity and just kind of general growing pains. But I think if we're going to sustain our success here and continue to grow, those are the two guys that we need more consistency from. When Swider comes in the game, we need him to actually not shoot every single second he touches the ball. And when he does shoot, to actually make it. I don't know. What do you think about Swider so far in the Big East play?
Yeah, you know, I would agree. I think it feels like his trigger is a little bit quick. That said, he really hasn't attempted that many threes. So, you know, when you look at his numbers, I mean, he's only taken two, two, one in the last couple games. So I think, look, he's a guy, to your point, he's going to have those nights where, you know, he hits a couple, he makes a free throw, he gets a dunk or a layup or what have you, and you know, you look up and he scored 11 points. But there's going to be a lot of other nights where he's 3 points, 5 points. He's just not a guy that I want to rely on or really have out there probably more than, you know, no more than 8 to 10 minutes a game at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I just want those minutes to be where I have, you know, faith and trust in those minutes instead of being like, well, let's see what we get from him today. Which is, you know, a lot to ask for a guy who's freshman and hasn't played a ton. So I think we're on the same page, though, in terms of the minutes. I think they will. So, okay. So we've seen some turnover now, obviously, since Big East play with some of the minutes. So do you expect things to kind of stabilize here? What do you think, you know, are we, is Jay going to kind of go back and forth with Cremo and Samuel starting or Bay? Or what's going to happen there?
Yeah, I kind of feel like what I would like to see is you know, Baby Arch, Booth, Pascal, Bay, Samuels is our starting five. And then Quinterly is the sixth man. Now, do I think that's what Jay's going to do? I have no idea because I sit there and scratch my head game after game after game.
Yeah, I just don't. It's going to be interesting with Roundtree. just sit here and look at it, you know. So starting with the LaSalle game, he played 23 minutes. Temple started 23 minutes. St. Joe's started 17. Penn started 17. Kansas started 28. UConn started 23. DePaul started 29. Providence started 23. St. John started 5. Creighton did not start 5. It's just such a severe drop-off.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, with him, and we didn't really mention it, is that there was some, you know, some question as to whether or not he was injured. Jay sort of cryptically alluded to it in the post-game. I think it was after the St. John's game. We've always been sort of tight-lipped with when guys are hurt or when they're not. So who knows if there's something else going on there? I'm not asking for a wholesale benching. I'd like to see him playing 15 minutes, 20 minutes a game, but I think he has to do a couple of things. I think he has to be much more aggressively rebounding offensively and defensively, and he's got to work on some type of a mid-range jump shot to at least make teams respect the fact that he's able to take that shot and make it. Because if he doesn't do those things, then his value is significantly diminished.
I agree. And, you know, as we're having this conversation and you say stuff out loud and you know, you sit here and you mull it over and you think about it, it's got to be an injury. Jay is not the type of dude who has ever really turned on a guy, especially like Roundtree, who by everything I've read, everything I've seen, does pretty much exactly what Jay wants. I could see him limiting his minutes, you know, to more like that 15-minute range, but outright cutting them and stuff, it's just not something that Jay would ever do. You know, I think he really is a believer in you do what I ask of you, and you work hard and jump through the hoops, and I reward you. And I just can't see him benching him. So I think the injury is the most likely excuse, although I can't see it when he's out there. I mean, I guess it and I hope it's definitely not a concussion, because he wouldn't be playing, right? So right. I wonder what it could be, or I wonder if that was just the rumor mill kind of making sense of it. But when you sit here and think about it, it has to be. But the thing that's been interesting to see is how we've played as a result with Roundtree on the bench. And I can't tell if it's related to Roundtree's benching, because it also seems to be contingent upon when Quinterly's on the floor. But we've been playing zone way more the last couple of games than we have in a very long time. We bust it out every now and then, generally. I don't have a number for you about percentage of time I feel like we play zone. But we'll, throughout the season, last year we have, the last couple of years, we'll put it in to surprise teams every now and then, play maybe, you know, 5 to 10 possessions of zone, and then go back and do a little matchup zone, and then go back to our man-to-man. But this year we've definitely played it more, and the last couple of games played a lot, which I have to imagine is due to Roundtree's injury. But what are your thoughts on our 2-3 zone so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think the usage of it has been timely. It's been, in my opinion, a good way to stop runs. I think it just throws teams off a little bit when they have to make that adjustment. And I think it's something that Jay's really utilized starting in 2016 to kind of pepper it in just as a way to mix it up, right? So I don't know that he does it for any reason other than that, just to kind of break up the flow of a game. So I like it. I'm all for it. I think probably the reason we're seeing it a bit more now is guys are coming along a little bit more. They're learning the system, right? So until you learn the switches on the man-to-man defense, he's not going to be able to put in a 2-3 matchup zone, right? It's got to be this evolution. And so from that sense, I think it's encouraging that we're doing it now.
You know, that's interesting. That's interesting, because I actually think it's the opposite. I think that that's why I said at the beginning, I can't figure it out if it's because of Quinterly or because of Roundtree. I think it's because of Quinterly. In this last game against Creighton, every time he came on the floor, he played him in the 2-3 zone. And you've talked about how our defensive schemes are hard to kind of grasp and everything like that. And I think that he doesn't trust him to kind of do the right switches and things like that on the man-to-man. But in the zone, he just has to kind of guard that 8 feet and kind of run back and forth. And I think he trusts him to do that a little bit more. So I'm really curious to see moving forward if we continue to do it. I thought, though, the important thing was I thought the zone worked against Creighton. I thought that it did two things. We communicated much better than we do on man-to-man. We've had a lot of miscommunications, I feel like, man-to-man, where two guys go to a guy or something like that. I thought everyone did a great job communicating on switching off players in the zone. And normally, you would think you'd give up a good amount of, like, open shots. We hardly gave up any, it seemed like, in the 2-3 zone. And then when Creighton made the little run there at the end of the game, it came from us actually going back to man, I thought.
Yeah, I think in some cases, you know, when we play the matchup zone, you can actually limit the ability of a team to shoot threes because you could have more bodies out on the perimeter. And that works in a case where a team doesn't have a dominant big man that they can dump it inside and that they're just going to beat whoever's back there one-on-one every time, right? So it's sort of the success of that zone, I think, also depends a lot on the team that we're playing. And a team like St. John's or a team like Creighton that plays a very similar offensive style to us and a heavy reliance on the three, I think you can have a little bit more success with it if you're playing an aggressive matchup zone.
Yeah, and I think in the Creighton game, if you recall, they jumped out to the early lead as usual, and that Crample guy was just killing us down low, just absolutely destroying us, and we couldn't guard him, and he wouldn't put Roundtree in for whatever reason, possibly injury, and I think he switched to the 2-3 zone to kind of clog and put some more guys in the paint and not just give up so many easy buckets, and I think that was the key to us winning the game. So I'm very curious to see if Roundtree's actually injured, if his minutes are going to go down, and what we're going to do with the zone. I think we should stick with it. I really liked how we played. I thought that it was good. I also think, you know, another reason for the zone, it just popped in my head, was Booth and Pascal, right? We can't afford those guys getting foul trouble. Additionally, we need to kind of give them some breathers. And so if we slow the game down offensively and we play the 2-3 zone so they don't have to run around and chase guys in the perimeter, they are, you know, have more energy to exert themselves on offense. So maybe it's a bunch of those things.
So one last thing, and you talked about slowing the game down offensively, and I'm going to take a different angle. I feel like we've been playing at a quicker pace. We've been running the floor. You know, I feel like early in the season, I couldn't tell you in the first five or six games, I don't know that we had a fast break layup or a dunk. I mean, honestly. So when you look at the games that we've had the three quickest pace statistics, it's Morgan State, Creighton, UConn. Those happen to be the three games that Quinterly has his most minutes played. So there's probably something to that.
Oh, there's definitely something to the Quinterly thing. Absolutely. Keep going.
Okay, so you take a look at the average pace of play over the course of the season. It's 67.61. So we've played 17 games. We've played 7 games above that. We've played 10 games below it. In the 7 games we've played above it, our average margin of victory is 17 points. In the 10 games we've played below it, our average margin of victory is 3 points.
Yeah, I'm with you. We have been playing a little bit faster than we did in the middle of the season. You know, we started off fast. You always start off fast with kind of the bad teams. But then in that middle, you know, the Advocare Invitational down in Florida and kind of the Big Five, we kind of went really slow. And we've been a little bit faster lately. But I think you are right. I think we did play faster these last couple of games. It didn't feel as terrible to watch us, right? It didn't feel as like we were strangling the life out of the game like we kind of were in the Big Five and early on in the Big East conference play. So
yeah, I think in general the Big East has been more palatable. Going to the Big Five, I mean, I found it honestly different. It was boring. Like I would be sitting there just like, what, you know, what am I watching? I can't stand to stomach this.
I think, you know, I don't, who knows, but to me it could be a thing where Jay really wanted to coach him hard in the early part of the season to really instill all of the things that he wanted to instill in them. You make a mistake, you come right out, you sit next to me, I yell at you, you learn. rinse, repeat. And so during those games, he slowed down the game tremendously just to kind of allow us so he could have ultimate control of the game. And then he either realized or he knows that he can't do that for a full season or he'll have a mutiny, and he kind of releases the reins a little bit. And then he, after he goes from teaching the guys all the things he wants to teach, he lets them play and supportive and just picks his spots to yell at a guy or to whatever. I feel like in you could tell in the in his huddles. So I don't know if it's intentional or not. I just know in his huddles in the early part of the season, man, he was angry. He was not, you know, normal cool Jay. And recently his huddles have been so much better. Just the standard, like, one, you know, talk about a master class in communication, right? You zoom in on the thing and he's just trying to deliver one message, you know. It's amazing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think a lot of that, at least visually for me, has come with some more leadership from right. Booth, right? So he's much more vocal. He's pulling guys aside. And it's really just been an evolution, I think, over the last, you know, certainly into conference play, but probably the last six games, where you've just seen more of that. And so maybe Jay's got a little bit more of a comfort level. But the question I have is who's going to pull him aside and slow down the game for him on these godforsaken inbound plays and end of half plays? Because I don't think I can take it.
Well, that's got to be Nardi or someone, man, or Neptune.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just if we take a timeout to drop a play with under 5 seconds left, you can rest assured we're not getting a shot off, or it's a half court chunk.
Yeah, we've been very bad at end of halves and out of timeouts. I agree with you. So that's. We'll see. Hopefully we can get a little bit better. I mean, just give the damn ball to Booth then and let him do his thing. That I can't be – we can't – you know, that's not that bad of a play call, you know. So, but hey, before we carry on, let's get a word from our sponsor here. Today's ad is sponsored by Geico. So, how happy are folks saving hundreds of dollars by switching to Geico? Happier than Bill Raftery getting to order a cheesesteak. Whiz with. And now back to the podcast. So, anything else we want to cover on the three games that happened here, or trends, or anything, or what? How about this? What's the one thing in these next couple of games that you're really interested in? What you're going to be focusing on?
I think it's just more consistency in playing a full 40 minutes, right? I don't think we've done that yet, and until we do. It's really kind of tough to gauge where this team is. I don't envision myself sitting down for any game this season and feeling like we're going to win, right? So I've got to see a little bit more consistency for 40 minutes, and maybe some of that will come as these rotations that we're talking about sort of play themselves out. But that's really kind of what I want to see. And then, you know, I'm excited to see what guys like Samuels and Quinterly are going to do. You can see the confidence is there. It's building. And then, you know, what does that do to allow, you know, Baby Arch to go back to a true off-ball guard and maybe start to lighten the load on Pascal and Booth a bit. So, I mean, I think there's a lot to be excited about with this team. But at the same time, I feel like we're, you know, one or two missteps away from just being right back in a position where we're floundering and struggling to get to a place where we're going to feel comfortable on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, I think that I agree for the most part. I think that Booth and Pascal have proven to me, at least, that even if they kind of don't sustain the same level, that they're still head and shoulders better than most guys we're going to play. That I just don't think that's going to be the case. I've yet to really see anyone corral Booth this season. He's really been the only guy that's kind of corralled himself. Maybe Michigan, but that seems like a lifetime ago. And Pascal, yeah, there were some games where he kind of got manhandled a little bit, but that hasn't happened in a while. He seemed to be much more under control, doing a much better job of picking his spots. Hell, he even went right the other day, which was crazy to me. But what do you got?
I was just gonna say on Pascal, I kind of forgot about it, but That alley-oop dunk that he had literally looked like he came off of a trampoline.
Oh, my God. He was
sick.
When Booth threw it, I thought it was too high. Yeah, I was like, man, what the hell are you doing, Phil? Right. but the one thing you touched on that I'm really interested to see is Gillespie. So Quinterly's coming on. Booth, as we talked about earlier, is taking a larger role in the distribution and kind of overall facilitation of the game. How is that going to shake out? I think we're both in agreement that Gillespie off the ball as a secondary ball handler is very good. As the primary one, he's not as good. So, but how is that still going to shake out in terms of minutes, responsibilities, etc.? I think Gillespie's the type of guy that can handle any role that's thrown at him, and his attitude and effort's going to be the same. He's also finally, in my opinion, he has gotten the fewest calls out of any player I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, like, he goes and battles down low, and they call a foul on him every single time, right? Where, like, Arch was literally mugging dudes. I think I've already made this point.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I agree.
So, he was mugging dudes, and they don't call it. He's finally – that's starting to turn the corner, I think, though.
So to answer your question, in terms of minutes, I don't really see a lot changing. You know, so as we talk about rotations and the changes that, you know, we've either seen or we're hoping to see, I don't really see that coming at the expense of his minutes. What I see is probably the volume of scoring probably changes a bit. You know, he was scoring pretty consistently in double figures early. He had a 21-point game. I don't see him getting back to that place. I think he's probably more, you know, an 8-12 kind of guy where he might throw up 15 here and there. So I don't really see his minutes changing as much as sort of his role or what he's being asked to do.
Absolutely. I'm just interested in seeing how that, you know, happens. Is it a comfortable transition, or is it, you know, a shaky one? But I think it'll be good.
So let me throw one more thing at you before we jump on Gillespie.
Okay.
So, you know, we talked about earlier in the year kind of the plus minuses and that advanced metric around, you know, the offense and the defensive metrics, and it's not truly a plus minus, right? But as I was kind of reading into it and seeing, you know, how it's actually calculated, what it kind of strikes me at is very similar to WAR in baseball, right? So it's, you know, per 100 possessions, what you do offensively and defensively, and how that would compare to an average player in your conference. So from the most simplistic sense, let's just look at Baby Arch, right? So through this point of the season, he's played 479 minutes. In total last year, he played 460 minutes. So a pretty fair comparison. And again, because these metrics are sort of based on 100 possessions, we can kind of make a comparison of his whole season last year versus just what we've seen so far this year. And if you take the offensive and defensive, you get this total number, right, which I'm kind of calling his WAR. It was actually higher last year at 7.7% than where it is so far this year, or 7.7 than where it is so far this year at 5.2, which when I looked at that, I was shocked. When you think about at the beginning of the season, what he was doing and what I sort of felt how important he was to the team, yes, that's sort of dwindled off here a bit recently, but I found that very surprising.
His shooting numbers were just so good last year. He was 28 of 71 from three at 39%. He's 26 of 71 at 36% this year. He's taking way more twos, but he was shooting 63% from two last year, which is really high, right? He was still getting steals. His steal percentage is actually the same this year as it was last year. And he turned over the ball less. Now, granted, he's got better assist numbers, but he had drastic reduction in turnover rate. He was at 17.3% this year to 13.3% last year. And obviously, that's so much role change. But I think that it's a better year for him this year. But I'm not surprised, because he just crushed it in his role last year. Now, almost anyone could have done it, right? If you're a good shooter and you could dribble the ball a little bit, anybody could have played Baby Archer's role last year, right?
Yeah.
But he just happened to do it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, when you run through the statistics, I'm with you, and I get it. It was just one of those things that when I looked at it, you know, in my mind, I would have never guessed it, just, you know, anecdotally thinking, hey, what, just watching what he's done this year and what I assessed his value to the team versus what it was last year.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, I understand from his role, you would just think, well, he's obviously had more in his 400 minutes or whatever, he's done more for wins this year than he did last year.
Correct.
Right. But it's compared to the average is how it works. So
sure.
Compared to the average, he hasn't done that much more than the average dude would have done.
Right.
You know, in the same amount of minutes.
Right.
But it's still surprising. You know, the reason we were so good all these years too is not just been our stars. I mean, they've been great, but it's been how good our role players are. I mean, you could argue that what Booth and Pascal are doing this year is just as good, if not better, than any duo has been the last 5 years. But it's the role players
sure.
that aren't as good. And that's true for a variety of reasons this year. Experience, positional, you know, differences, things like that. So, all right, man, so the Russ Smith efficiency game. So Russ Smith is one of my personal basketball spirit animals. I loved Russ Smith, man. I know it's you know, I can't like a guy in the Big East like that, but Russ Smith was the Louisville short little guard that shot thousands of times a game and still was efficient. And he's got this great quote when asked about winning the efficiency award. Then I'll play it for you.
You win the efficiency of the year award, then you're efficient.
Right.
I mean, 2 + 2 = 4.
See, isn't that great?
You're out of control, man. You latch on to these things.
How can you not love them? So, anyways, all right, let's do the stat game.
All right, so here we go. We're gonna stick with guys that are on the team this year.
Okay.
It's been guys that we've talked a bit about tonight, but have sort of been maybe on the fringe this season.
Okay. Sure.
So we've got effective field goal percentage, 53.6. We've got a total rebound percentage of 9.3. We've got a usage of 15.8. And then I'm going to go back to that kind of stat that I was throwing out earlier on the points per minute played, 0.28 points per minute played.
Okay.
All right. And then for player number two, we've got effective field goal percentage of 62.5, total rebound percentage of 13.5, usage percent of 20.6, and 0.36 points per minute played.
Okay. Wait, so I'm confused. Are both these guys on the team?
They are.
Both these guys are on the team. It's so stupid that I stare at these numbers and I still don't know them off the top of my head. All right, 62.5. Okay, one of these guys is Bay. I know that, and I just can't figure out which one. I'm gonna go with player B to be Bay, but I don't know if that's right. The only other guy it could be would be. So the usage is only 20.6, huh? All right, I'm gonna stick with Bay. I think that's too high, guys. I don't think that his usage is that high. And then the second guy, I'm gonna go with that guy, Swider. So A is Swider, B is Bay.
Okay.
And I'm wrong on B, but that's
you're okay. Wrong on both.
Damn.
But Bay was actually A, and Samuels is B.
I still, you know, the usage really threw me on Samuels that he's at 20.
Yeah, and it threw me when I first looked at it. But here you go. Here are the minutes played, and it's some heavy minutes early. 15, 26, 13, 18. Then he had an 8, then 13, then a couple games where he was, you know, 6-5, but then right back, 15, 26, 18, 15. So he's logged some minutes, and, you know, he's the guy for me that's like the ultimate antithesis of my loved and behold eye test, right? So he's a guy that I was ready to write off at the beginning of the year. I wanted him out of the program. I thought he was garbage. I'm happy to see him coming along. But when you look at his stats, right, it kind of just goes back. And I wanted to – I'm glad you picked Bay as B, because I was trying to hopefully trip you up, because we sit here and we talk about how great Bay is. And, you know, I don't know that we've said one negative thing about Bay all season. And the expectations piece certainly plays in, right? So he's been a pleasant surprise.
Right.
And so when he makes a mistake, you kind of just shrug it off, right? But so – what I really wanted to kind of call out here tonight is how valuable Samuels has been and how he continues to become more and more valuable, particularly, I think, from a rebounding and defensive perspective going forward. So I'm glad that you played right into my hand.
Well, you know me well enough that I would do that. But, dude, Samuels, we've first of all, let's give ourselves some credit. We have not said a bad thing about him in probably a month. And we gave him a great nickname. And, you know, he's been awesome, dude. And you talk about the eye test. It depends what eye test you're looking at. Because sometimes you watch him and he's jumping over dudes. He's blocking shots. His athleticism is crazy. The one thing that I love is when you hear something that's simple, like an idiom, and sometimes a lot of them are stupid, but one of them I always liked that Billis says is that the ball finds energy.
Yeah.
And you know, when you see his usage at 20, he's never standing still. He's cutting hard. He's setting a hard screen. He's crashing the board hard. Yes, he probably has a lot of stupid loose ball falls and things like that. But his energy is contagious. It's necessary. It does good things, and the ball finds him. And man, I'm very happy that we were both kind of wrong on him. I he's not my favorite player, but I would go to war with him.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I don't want him playing 35 minutes a game. But like, if like something stupid happened and we had to dress like five dudes, like, you know, the phone scandal back in school when all those guys, and you had to play Samuels like 30 minutes, you'd be like, all right, we get 30 minutes of the deer tonight. I wonder what he's going to do. Yeah. You know, he would do something stupid like get a triple double.
Now, don't get too crazy with me here, but he has a lot of aspects of his game from a hustle, from an attitude that remind me a little bit of Josh Hart early in his career. So I'm not saying the guy's going to the NBA or anything like that, but he's got some of those qualities that you know, I see him do things and it sort of reminds me of Hart.
I agree with you on the effort side of it. The difference is why we call him the deer, and I think we both agree that. Just not – Hart knew exactly what he was doing every time, even when he was a freshman. Yeah. He knew exactly what to do. Samuels almost does it by mistake. But I think he's getting better at figuring out what to do.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be a guy that we're going to look at next year, and he's going to be making a lot of winning plays, smart plays, because he's starting to get confident. And he's not a dumb guy. He just – You know, everyone's different. For example, I'm very bad when I do something for the first time. I can't wrap around what something's going to be like. And then after I do it one time or two times, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. And then I feel like my learning goes up from there. But the first time, I'm terrible. And I feel like Samuels is almost the same way. He doesn't know what he's doing. Once he's done it a couple times, he's like, oh, okay, I get the ball here. I can just dunk it. Okay, I know how to do that. You know, and now he just does it all the time and he's good.
Kind of like making it to class first semester freshman year.
That's right. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. That's when I figured it out. And well, I don't know where I was going with that because I never really did. Anyways, let's move on. So let's wrap this up. Xavier's our next game. But before we do that, let's take a look at the betting leaderboard here. So we had two games that we picked. So we picked the Providence game. And the line we had was Nova -2, which Nova beat. I took Nova, you took Providence, so I got a win there. Nova got a win against the spread, and you took a bad beat. The next game we picked was St. John's, and the spread was Nova -6. Final score of the St. John's, final spread, sorry, was 5, rather. And so both of us had picked St. John's, so we both won. We both took the points.
Yeah.
That was a lot of points for home game against the Johnnies. I know they've struggled a little bit here, and they lost to DePaul, but Pons was hurt. That line still feels really weird to me. So anyways, you and I picked up a win there. Nova lost one against the spread. So on the season, that takes us to this. Villanova is 3-7-1. And these are just our games, mind you, that we've ended up picking against the spread. You, my friend, are 5-5-1. And I am 5-5-1 as well. So we got Xavier coming up on Friday at the Pavilion.
It's at Wells Fargo, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wells Fargo on a Friday night, huh? Friday night's a weird tip-off time. There hasn't been many Friday night games, have there?
No, very rare. I mean, usually only the Pac-10 and the Ivy League play on Friday.
That's right, the Pac-10. The Pac-12, man.
It's the Pac-10. And they're lucky they're not the Pac-8, because that's about, you know, right, the volume of teams that they have in their conference that are even Division I.
Right. So Xavier is 11-7 on the season, 3-2 in the Big East. And if you remember last time I said it looked like Kevin Willard was growing hair. Well, it turns out I'm an idiot, and the coach I actually saw was Xavier's new head coach, Travis Steele. Have you seen him?
Yeah, I've seen him. He's got pretty much a full head of hair.
He doesn't. Well, he's got it shaved short. It's not like a full head of hair.
Yeah,
like,
but it's not Kevin Willard.
Well, but he looks like Willard, though.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. We'll see. I think he looks like Willard. So I defend myself and my idiocy, but it still was kind of dumb in retrospect. Anyways, Xavier, to give a quick background, they're kind of a middling offensive team and a pretty poor defensive team. So that basically could describe everyone in the Big East this year. The conference is much better offensively than defensively. They're a tall team in the sense they have height at each position, not necessarily just 6'11 dudes. They have tall guards, tall forwards, etc. So they're 20th in the country in effective height. They shoot very well from two as a result, which is unsurprising. The 30th best two-point field goal percentage. They shoot terribly from three, but they don't take too many of them. And defensively, the best thing you can say is that they don't foul too often. They bring back Najee Marshall, who's their best player, but he's kind of in the Kamar Baldwin camp, who from Butler, who has actually been playing a little bit better. But, dude, Marshall has to be maybe one of the worst dudes, high-volume three-point shooters in the country. He's 14-69 in the season, which is 20%.
Good Lord.
So, it's terrible. All right, so what do you think the spread is, Mike?
I'm going to say 9.5.
9.5. Spread is Nova -10.
Oh, am I good or what?
Yeah, doing well. Almost like you looked in advance, huh? Yeah? No, I know you don't do that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? Are you going to take Nova or are you taking the wood?
I'm back on the bandwagon.
You're back on the bandwagon. Man, we both can't be on the bandwagon, though, at the same time, I feel like. It's always bad news. But, you know, who am I to not take the Wild Kittens, dude, at home?
Here's the only thing that scares me. If you think about it, right, so we used to just, for whatever reason, throttle Xavier at home
when
they were good. And now we'll probably lay an egg.
Right. They got a new coach, a new thing. He probably doesn't hype it up like Mac does, you know? I don't know. We'll see. I would like to see us just continue to beat their ass, though. Wouldn't that be cool if, like, you look up, like, 5 years from now and Xavier's, like, 2-20 against Villanova or something like that? That would just be fun.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm gonna buy into the delusion and take Nova as well. So, all right, man. Well, you could tell we haven't talked in a while because we went over the hour mark here. But you got anything else for the folks listening at home?
No, I think that's it. I mean, I think my attitude about this team, while volatile, is certainly improving. I'm excited to see the next couple games and where they are.
I agree. It's been interesting this year. I think that's why I wanted to do the podcast. I've said it several times. These little things, these little changes, the lineup stuff, the minutes. I can't wait to see what happens with Roundtree. I have to say two things. First of all, I'm going to be better about calling him Cosby Roundtree, because if that's his real name, I should just call it by his real name. But I'm going to be a little bit disappointed if he comes back and plays like 25 minutes again. I like their small ball. I love small ball. So, all right. Well, we've talked enough. So, all right, man. I will talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you later.